Last couple of days, we've had some really great folks on here, Marcus Hayes and Angelo Cataldi. We were talking about the Eagles. We were talking about the culture. And I loved it today. It reminded me of what the NFL was all about. Brandon Graham, if you're 30 years old, like say Xander is, half his life he's seen Brandon Graham play football. If you're 60 years old, half your life, the next guy who's coming up here has been calling Eagle games. And you've heard his voice. And you know what I love today? The first question was from Merrill Reese asking Brandon Graham a question. And I thought that that's how that press conference should have went. And ladies and gentlemen, our good friend Merrill Reese joins us now. And I absolutely love that, Merrill. I appreciate it. Let's see if we can bring Merrill up now, Xander, and get him up here. See if we can get him up. Hey, Merrill, I love the fact that you were the first person to ask a question to Brandon Graham on his retirement. I thought it was awesome. And just a couple takeaways from you on what you saw today and what you thought of the press conference.
Well, it was a great press conference. And Brandon spoke from his heart. I mean, he had a written speech, so to speak, but you could see it was genuine. But everything about Brandon Graham is genuine. He's one of the best people I've ever known. When people ask me, who is my favorite Eagle over all these years? I mean, there are so many great guys, so many great players. But I say there's nobody that I think more of than Brandon Graham, because he is such a decent person. I've mentioned to you before that if I would go into the NovaCare facility in the morning and I would bump into Brandon Graham, my whole day just got better, because that's the kind of magnetic personality, uplifting personality he is. He's just a special person.
Do you think, Merrill, that one of the reasons that the city adopted him, feels connected to him, was his journey, that things were bumpy in the beginning, then all of a sudden you started seeing him come on, then he became an impact player, then he started to go through some of the great historical moments in Eagle history where you win two Super Bowls, you've won three NFC championships with him. You saw him with the strip sack of Brady in the Super Bowl, one of the most impactful plays next to Ertz's catch. I mean, all of that, was that why they went along with the journey? Because they saw a guy who had a bumpy start and really a climactic ending when he was there in the Super Bowl standing there with his mates.
I think a lot of it has to do with the length of his career, but the fact that you never caught him off guard. He was the same person. He wasn't a guy, and he alluded to this too. He felt that that he had a responsibility. He had a responsibility. If the team won, he would be out there. If the team lost, he would be out there. He said, "That's you have to be able to stand high in defeat as well as you do when after a victory." I mean, there was a thing in the golf world a couple of weeks ago where Colin Morikawa lost in the last few strokes, and then he disappeared, and then he came back, and he basically said, and I think his words were, "I don't owe anybody anything." And he was kind of taken to task for that by Brandel Chamblee and Paul McGinley on the post-game show by saying, doesn't he realize what the responsibility is, that the golf wouldn't be the big story and have the all of the sponsors' dollars and be what it is today if it weren't for not so much the media, but the media acting as the connection to the fans, to the supporters. And I'm sure he's a good guy, but I think he just spoke offhandedly and without being aware of that at that moment. But Brandon Graham was that was never Brandon Graham. You knew that no matter what the Eagles did, how great it was or how awful it was on that day, that Brandon Graham would be there and put the whole thing in perspective. He treated everybody well. He didn't have moods. He didn't one day show up and the next day didn't. He didn't lash out at anybody. In fact, he kind of teased the media by saying that, sometimes I'd get myself into trouble by saying too many things and being misinterpreted, and at least I don't have to worry about that anymore. And there was an incident this year where he said something on or after a show about the fact that it had to do with A.J. Brown, and it had to do with something where he misspoke. But he laughed about that, but he always treated everybody with respect. And through the media, that came through to the fans. And they saw the way he busted on the field every play. He never took a play off. You saw the passion he had for this city, for this team. And he was great today. He was really great today.
He was. I mean, you know, it just seems to me, listening to him, that he was always aware of his surroundings. Like you said, I mean, Mark Howard doesn't understand that, you know, again, sometimes emotion plays a fact into that. You know, when you're so high on something, you're so low. When you go through sports sometimes, Merrill, you go through the highs and lows and you forget the surroundings and where you're at because you're so much tunnel vision, you don't really remember and think about the things that you are. And that leads me to a question somebody asked me earlier here. Maybe he's the greatest captain in Philadelphia sports history. I mean, you know, you go Bobby Clark, you start talking about some of the people that have meant so much to an organization, especially to a defensive unit, some of the greatest moments in Eagle history. I mean, you could make the argument that Brandon Graham is maybe one of the greatest leaders and one of the greatest captains that the Eagles have ever had, maybe the greatest leader they've ever had.
You can. You can make that argument easily. I mean, he was a great player. He turned out to be a great player. Was he Reggie White? No, he wasn't Reggie White. He was an outstanding defensive end. But he was a guy who was always there. Reggie, by the way, was a great guy, too. But Reggie didn't have the 15 years that Brandon Graham had in this city. And it was a different world then. But Brandon Graham had that feeling of his responsibility, what his role was, not only with us, but with his teammates. He was a guy to go to them. He was a guy to talk to them, to teach them. He was a barometer of everything in that locker room. And he was always, always respectful to his teammates, to his coaches, to his fans. He was never a guy who would walk by a kid or anybody who wanted an autograph or a picture without acquiescing. He was just one of the best people that ever played this game.
Merrill, help me here with this one. It's kind of the changing of the guard here a little bit. Last couple of years, you've had Fletcher Cox, you've had Jason Kelce, now you have Brandon Graham. The last really link to all that is really Lane Johnson, and he got a contract extension. I mean, I was telling everybody, hey, the one thing you always want to do, you always want to pay the sure things. And that's a sure thing over there at right tackle. So adding a little extra money there. But you're seeing a lot of the young players, some of the things that you're seeing with, you know, some of the names that have moved on. But do you feel it too? This is kind of like a changing of the guard a little bit here. And they're on the lead pole. They have so many good players that I'm not saying that they're taking steps back or they're resetting or it's rebuilding. I'm just saying it looks to me like, you know, the new guys, it's their time to step up.
Well, you know, every team, every good team, every Super Bowl champion is going to have components that become very, very coveted by teams around the league. So you are, and because of the salary cap, you can't keep all of these components. You've got to make choices. You've got to say, well, I must have Zach Bourne. And here's how much I'm going to pay Zach Bourne, knowing that you're going to lose Milton Williams and Josh Sweat. And Howie is good at evaluating these things. But they have lost. They've lost people. They lost Rick Lovato, who was the long snapper. Now, when you talk about the components of the team, you never think about the long snapper as being a key element. But in that locker room, he was a key guy. Rick Lovato was beloved by his teammates. He was very much part of this. But I understand the facts of the business that the NFL is. You're going to lose people. But on the other hand, when people say, well, This is a great team. They're going to come back, and they're going to be the favorites for the Super Bowl, and probably they will be the presumptive favorites for the Super Bowl. But with this many, I mean, they've brought in about three or four different tight ends and linebackers, and there are going to be draft choices. The Super Bowl 59 champions will never play again together. That was one and done. Now, are they a great team? Yeah, on paper they are, but they have got to acquire a certain chemistry. And Nick will be the first to tell you that there is a chemistry to a team that a coach must be able to conjure up, to unite, to put together so that they have that winning feeling and that they become a team that cares, that each guy cares about the guy in the locker room to his right and to his left. They care about each other. And that's what this team had. This team didn't have factions. Oh, you heard something here and there where AJ wanted more balls, and you know what wide receiver Mike says what wide receiver doesn't want more balls thrown in his direction. There were minor indiscretions here and there, but nothing big, nothing big. This was a team that loved each other. To be cliche, they were one for all for one. That's how this was a team. Now, you've got to reconstruct that. You've got to conjure that same feeling up again next year. That's a big deal. That's a very, very big deal, Dan. That's not automatic. And that's something that Nick has got to face, and the new coaching staff. I mean, there will be new coaches in there also. People come and go. And the 2025 Eagles will have some of the key elements of the 2024 Eagles, but they are a different team.
You know, you say that, and it's so true. Do you believe that Howie, being a different general manager since that first Super Bowl you won? Because correct me if I'm wrong, Merrill, after that 2017 season, when you guys went into the 18th Super Bowl against the Patriots, you guys signed a lot of those aged veteran guys, brought them back, and it turned out to kind of start the implosion of the team a little bit, or the eroding, I'll say, where they weren't as competitive prior to that Super Bowl. This time it looks like they've moved on from the high money guys and are going to redevelop and are going to reinvest inside the roster with some of the younger players, because that's how you maintain long longevity of winning, is that investing in your own player development. Signing mercenaries to 1 and 2 year contracts, that's a really tricky proposition. Signing core veteran kids that you believe in and allocating, I'm throwing a word allocating out to people, not being frugal or anything, but hey, I got money for Juergens. I got to make the decision on Jordan Davis. I got to make a decision, a huge one, on how much I'm going to pay Jalen Carter. There's even a Nolan Smith contract. So all of that is over here on what he's looking at. So my question to you, I asked Marcus Hayes and Angelo this. Do you think he's a better general manager since that first Super Bowl, that he sees the game better now, where he's got to invest more in his core guys and bringing some of these older guys back?
Howie is very, very smart. He understands the game. He understands what you have to do to put together a championship team. And it would be impossible for him not to be a better general manager this many years hence. He's learned something every year. Look, I've learned something. This is going to be my 49th year. I'm a better broadcaster than I was after 30 years or after 40 years. I see more things when I'm watching a game. I've learned from mistakes, and we've all made mistakes. Every one of us has made mistakes. So we all learn. I mean, if you talk about a writer, every writer 4 years later is better than he was 4 years ago because he has more things in his frame of reference that he didn't have earlier. Howie knows what works, knows what didn't work. And every one of us realizes we've made mistakes. And Howie is a terrific general manager, and he's smart, and he gets smarter every year.
Absolutely, he does. I put down 10 guys, Merrill. My 10 favorite Eagles. I want you to hear them, and you tell me what you think of these guys. These are my 10 favorite Philadelphia Eagles. Tell me if you like my list and if you would add somebody. Number 10, I got Jason Kelsey. I think Jason Kelsey brought a lot, probably the best center in the history of the franchise. And if you can make the argument, maybe one of the top centers in the history of the sport. Number 9, I got Brandon Graham here. 2-time Super Bowl champion, 3-time NFC champion, 80 sacks with the playoffs, if you add that. Over 200 games played. Maybe one of the most accomplished resumes in Philadelphia Eagle history. I got him 9. Number 8, I got Shady McCoy. Man, I love watching him play. The snow game will always stick out for me. How everyone was slipping and how that guy was still going for 200 yards. Number 7, you know, it was in my era. I put Randall Cunningham. You know, I think if Randall Cunningham was in today's NFL, he'd be Patrick Mahomes. The things that he could do.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
You know, with not a very good O-line, so I got Randall 7. Number 6, one of my favorite all-around running backs in the history of the sport, Villanova's own Brian Westbrook. God, can he catch, block, run, tough. Just love the way the kid played. Number 5, you know, people loved Aaron Donald, and rightfully so, but I always thought Fletcher Cox was the more all-around, played the run, pass rushed, big, physical, lived up to the 13th pick in the draft. Longevity-wise, probably the best defensive tackle in the Super Bowl era. Now, I'm biased with that picture behind me there, Jerome Brown. He was my running mate at the University of Miami. So I've got Jerome 4, and obviously very biased with having Jerome 4 there. So, you know, forgive me for having him there. Number 3, Brian Dawkins. I mean, it was like a lead pipe running around a football field when he hit you. It was like you saw him there. You talk about intimidating. There was a little bit of a Jack Tatum kind of attitude with him. And so it was like I always called him the lead pipe that ran around the field. Number 2, Bednarik. I don't know how you don't say any list or any conversation when you're talking Eagles and not have Bednarik's name. The last truly great two-way player. I mean, Deion could say all he wants. You want to know what a really two-way player was? It was symbolic of what Philly was and the NFL was. I've always said this. Butkus embodied Chicago. And Green Bay, Nitschke embodied the NFL through the Packers. Sam Huff, who played with my uncle in New York. The league was not run by quarterbacks back then. It was run by the middle linebackers in the NFL, and that was symbolic of our league back then. And Bednarik, it ran through him as well. And, of course, Reggie, I mean, you know, I've never seen anything like it to this day. I mean, the hump that he had when he threw people on their head. I saw him pick Chris Carter up once on game film, and I watched it. He picked him up, threw him in to Warren Moon, who was 7 yards back. I'd never seen anybody kill the guy in front of him and then throw a receiver who was supposed to block him. And he threw him about 10 yards and catapulted him. I mean, he was such a great player. Those are my 10 Eagles. What do you think?
I can't argue with any of them. I can't. But you're covering almost 80 years. And there are too many other names in there who can be thrown in and belong also. I mean, if you're going to add Bednarik, then you've got to name Van Buren.
Well, Van Buren
was
right.
One of the great running backs of his day, and is in the Hall of Fame. So if you're going to name a middle linebacker, my goodness, he just passed away Christmas Day. Bill Berge, was such a force on this football team for so many years. He was great. I mean, I'm not arguing with any of yours. If you had to add guys, and I don't want to put a number on any of them, I'll give you a couple of wide receivers. I'll give you a couple that are there right now. Right now, A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith are two great Eagles linebackers. And so was Shady McCoy. Shady McCoy was unbelievable. Shady McCoy, of course, was a great running back. But I'm talking about some of the other great wide receivers. My partner in the booth, Mike Quick, was phenomenal.
Carmichael.
So was Harold Carmichael. Phenomenal. But, how about LaShawn Jackson? I mean, how great was he? He's the greatest tracker of the football I've ever seen. I mean, he was absolutely amazing. But you go on and on. You're talking about offensive linemen. Lane Johnson, great. Eagles had a bookend pair back in the Vermeil era of tackles. Stan Waters, who was my partner in the booth for 14 years, and Jerry Sizemore. These guys were great players. I mean, it's just, and I'm glad that you named guys like Westbrook, but there was a guy by the name of Wilbert Montgomery who was electric, actually electric. So you're putting it down to 10. I'm sure there are names that I haven't even, but brought up. But there were so many amazing players. But certainly the guys you talked about, like Reggie White and Jerome Brown, tremendous, tremendous. But there's one going into the Hall of Fame this year who was as good a defensive back, as good a corner as you will ever see, by the name of Eric Allen. 6-time Pro Bowler. So I'm saying to narrow it to 10 is impossible. Now, I'm sure there are 15 or 20 I didn't even name as I talk about it. But there were great players. There were great players over the years, and some that belong, Bill Berkey, for example, belongs in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
It's prime that he's not in the Hall of Fame. I'm glad Eric Allen is going in. But another guy who you could put in the Hall of Fame, tremendous, tremendous player, hard-hitting, bright, analytical. And I mean, how about Seth Joyner?
Yeah.
I mean,
agreed.
Seth Joyner, what a great player he was. Great Hall of Famer. Not in, but in the Eagles Hall of Fame, yes. But there are, and one day, Ron Jaworski. Ron Jaworski was a heck of a quarterback. You know, when they went to the Super Bowl after the 80 season, he was the player of the year in the NFC. Ron Jaworski had a terrific career and has stayed here and been a pillar of the community in all the things that he has done over his years here in this Delaware Valley. But it goes on and on and on of guys that I could, the more I sit here, the more I think of another guy, There are so many of them that are absolutely great.
How about this, Merrill? Tell me your relationship that you had with McNabb.
I'll bring up Donovan McNabb. Donovan McNabb had a great year, great career here.
I mean, when you hear some of the people talking about Brandon Graham and you hear Jason Kelce, you saw how the love that they had for Fletcher Cox. What was his relationship with the community like? And obviously, Jalen has a different relationship. I mean, the community embraces him and loves him. It just seemed like a hot, cold relationship. Maybe it was more that way with Randall. Correct me if I'm wrong on this. I mean, Randall had a hot and cold relationship, or maybe that was just with the media that he had a hot and cold relationship with. But it just seemed that him and McNabb were kind of like, they were kind of like hot. Sometimes you liked them, sometimes you didn't. Both fabulous players. I wonder what they were like for you to cover compared to somebody, say, like a Jalen Hurts, who is, it seems that he's very accessible to you and you can go up and talk to him at any time. Right. These other guys didn't seem that way, or am I wrong?
No, I think, well, first of all, it was a different world back in those days. Dan, I was thinking about this. I'm speaking with my wife, Cindy, about this. It used to be covering practice. You go out there and you sit there and you or stand there and you watch the entire practice. Today you're out there for 15 minutes and somebody blows the horn and the rest of the practice is closed. You get to see them warm up and stretch and catch a few passes and then media leaves the field. So that's number one. So we used to stand out there and watch the whole practice, and then Dick Vermeil or whomever the coach was would come over to the sideline afterwards, or we'd walk to the middle of the field, and there'd be six of us. The Inquirer, the Daily News, the Bulletin, maybe a couple of TV guys and me, and we'd surround Dick Vermeil, and we'd have a conversation for 15 or 20 minutes. Now, everything is orchestrated. You have the coach's press conference. You have the coordinator's press conference. You're in a large auditorium. There are at least 40 or 50 people down there every day covering the team. You didn't have the access. You don't have the access to players now that you did then. And that, except maybe a little bit during the summer, you can catch them coming off the field at training camp. But it's totally different. But I want to tell you something. Randall was a great guy. Said some unusual things, played the game a little bit differently. His buddy used to say, go out there and make three big plays a game and I'll take care of everything else. Donovan was a great quarterback. Look at Donovan's numbers. He's got the all-time records in so many Eagles categories. Donovan was a great quarterback, and my relationship with Donovan was wonderful. We had a good, terrific relationship. And whenever I see him, I'm really happy to see him. I think he's a great guy. And you know how I feel about Jalen Hurts. I think when it's all over, he will be described as, or fit the description as, the greatest quarterback in the history of the Philadelphia Eagles. But I always use the word modern history, because as you name Bednarik, you're talking about a different game. You're talking about different sized players with different degrees of speed. I mean, have I ever seen for one season, now I was a young kid, but for one season, 1960, there was a quarterback here who was like a coach. That was Norm Van Brocklin. You look at what Norm Van Brocklin did back in 1960. I mean, He didn't have any plays sent into him. He was the one who turned to him. Now, Tommy McDonald. Tommy McDonald was another great player who's in the Hall of Fame we didn't talk about. But Norm Van Brocklin would yell at him if he didn't do what he was supposed to do. And he'd go after the offensive lineman. He was a coach on the field. The head coach was Buck Shaw. But Norm Van Brocklin was the leader on and off the field. Phenomenal quarterback. But it's ridiculous to compare Van Brocklin to Jalen Hurts or to Donovan McNabb or to Randall Cunningham or Ron Jaworski even, because it was a different league. It was a different era. The requisites were different. It was so different. So I like to use the word, I said the word at the end of the Super Bowl, this is the greatest Eagles team in modern history.
Finally here, Merrill, I want you to talk about the fans for a second. What I loved about that presser today with Brandon Graham was how he talked about you guys. You know, you talk to them every weekend. And one thing I've learned is that, boy, I'll tell you, when you get kudos from the Eagle fans and they give you a tip of the cap and they send you off, it ain't like L.A., it ain't like any place else, even like New York. It really does show you. There's no gray area, is there, in Philly when it comes to their athletes? You're either a non-productive guy, or you're going to be somebody we revere. And we're going to reward you with our affection and our loyalty and our passion for what you did for 15 years. Same with Kelsey, same with Fletcher. It's a different group of folks that really like love that team, isn't it? I mean, it's a different,
sure.
It just looks different to me.
Well, I mean, they are passionate. They are there. They're great fans. They're great fans. And their booing, for which they're famous, that's just a reflection of their passion and their hurt if they're not getting what they think this team is capable of giving them. But they fall in love with their player. I mean, you just named, you know, a lot of big stars. I mean, if John Dorenbos, who was the snapper, comes back, he won't have to buy a meal. I mean, they love John Dorenbos. I mean, there's so many guys.
Absolutely. Hey, Merrill, it's always great talking to you, and thank you so much. I love the fact that you asked the first question. I thought that was so poetic.
I didn't realize I did. They just said questions, and I said to Brandon Graham, when did you realize that you would go down as one of the most beloved Eagles in history? And certainly, he is one of the most.
Absolutely. Merrill, thank you, my friend. I appreciate your time as always. Hey, how's the golf game coming around?
Well, I had, today is 4 weeks since I had my left knee replaced. So, and I'm walking very easily without any problems. So come the warm weather, I'll be out there by May.
Who do you like for the Masters?
Rory.
Boy, did you see him take apart the players? I watched him at the Players. That's a tough place to play, Sawgrass. I've played that course, actually. And when it's wet like that, it's impossible to play because the roughs. If you play that Bermuda grass and you get down there and play, I'm sure you have. During this time when it rains like that, you cannot. You have to be Hercules to get that ball out of the rough like that.
Absolutely. But I love Rory. Met him one time when he came to an Eagles game, and I was absolutely thrilled. Mike Quick and I are big, big golf fans. We both play incessantly during the off season, and when we met Rory before a game where he actually came up to say hi in the booth, we were absolutely like two kids going to a ball game and looking up and getting someone to give us, we didn't get an autograph, but we got a picture. And but he's a great guy. He is my favorite golfer.
Can I tell you one Arnold Palmer story?
Well, you're talking about my all-time favorite golfer.
So I had a show in the state of Florida, and every year we would have the Arnold Palmer Tournament, which is now a different name for a tournament now, but it was called the Arnold Palmer Invitational. And so every year they invited my radio show. I was on in Tampa, Orlando, Jacksonville, Miami, but I was based in Orlando. And so I moved to Orlando, and I went down to the Arnold Palmer, went down to Bay Hill. And Bay Hill's a phenomenal golf course. It's just so great. Unfortunately, when the summer comes and that grass gets like, you know, it just fries that grass because it's been overseeded, whatever. I'm sitting there in the middle of my stupid, I'm doing some dumb rant. Some guy sticks his head across like this. He looks over at me and I go, well, folks, Mr. Arnold Palmer, I've never in my life ever stopped my show. He's got his dog Mulligan with him. He called him Mulligan.
Golden Retriever.
Yeah, and so he comes over and he goes, do you mind? I go, I don't even remember what I was talking about. And so he came over, he sat down, and for the next 2 hours, we just started talking golf, and he was talking about winning in Cherry Hill, and he was talking about playing against Nicklaus and how he would, you know, go out every year, and he would play with Bobby Jones when they first, Bobby was still alive, and they were running the Masters. And the next day, I got an invitation to go play a round of golf with him. I don't know, man. I mean, I don't know how many balls I lost that day, Merrill, but I could just tell you, he's the only guy I've ever been on. It's the guy who met presidents, kings, all kinds of stuff, started advertising for people. He had a presence about him that was just second to none. Tiger and Jack did a lot for the game, but Arnold brought TV to the game.
Oh, Arnie's Army? Are you kidding? And the fact that nobody ever had more feel for the responsibility to his fans than Arnold Palmer. He was the ultimate. You know what the name of my street is, by the way?
What's that?
Bay Hill Drive.
Oh, wow. That is great. Oh, my God. If you ever get down there, you've got to let me know. I mean, we lived in Orlando for such a long period of time, and the club president down there at Bay Hill, Sawgrass, too. We got some really great connections down there. Also, the PGA National, where they played the 1975 PGA Championship. I've played that course down there too. I've played a lot of golf courses. But again, Merrill, you're on one of my favorites. I won't lie. You are on one of my favorite golf courses, man. I can't believe it. I'd love to see what that clubhouse looks like in the club that you belong to.
It's beautiful.
I mean, is there any Hogan stuff in there?
Oh, there's our archivist, John Capers, his name is. He's a 7 or 8-time Murrayan champion. He has the archives room. I'll go up there. I can wander around for 3 hours and never get my fill.
Absolutely. Merrill, thank you so much. Keep that knee coming around. We need you back on the golf course. It's
great. I'm walking, no cane, nothing. I'm driving. I'm out and about.
So you're going to be ready for spring training, and you're going to be ready for fall camp. I can't wait. All right.
Ready. I'm ready now.
Thank you. You and Nolan Smith will be ready for camp.
Yep.
Thank you very much, man. Okay. I appreciate it. Thank you, Merrill.
Okay, bye-bye.
You got it. Our friend Merrill Reese. Legendary voice, man. Yeah, man, I was a great presser today. I really was. I was an absolutely fabulous presser. Xander, I think I just got a text from our boy. See if Gary Cobb texts us here. Oop, nope. We are still set up. Xander's going to join us at 4:30 Eastern time. So make sure you hit the like button. Guys, when we come back, I've got 9 players that I'm looking at. What we're doing now is we get closer to the NFL draft. I'm going to start tapering down like I did last year. I'd like Chop Robinson and I think 2 other players for you to land on. And every year I've landed on a guy who's been an impact football player. McDuffie ended up being an impact player for the Chiefs. I like that kid, Edgerrin Cooper. He was an impact player this past season, too. I'm starting to get a sense of who I think would fit at that 32nd pick, all barring them moving out or up. At 32, I'm down to 9 guys now. Okay? I'm down to 9 players. So I'm going to tell you who my 9 guys are, and then we'll start tapering it down as we get closer to the April draft. Hit that like button. Don't forget our great friends at Morgan & Morgan, the number one injury law firm in America. With over $20 billion in recovery for families across the country, the team of 1,000 of attorneys that John Morgan's group have put together are there to protect families. I tell you about the story in Pennsylvania. Initial offer by an insurance company of $650K. No way. They went in and got nearly $30 million in recovery for that family. Or in Florida, we talk about a $350,000 initial offer by an insurance company. Morgan & Morgan went in, looked at it, and said, no way. They ended up getting nearly $14 million for that respected family. If you're ever injured, please check out my friends at Morgan & Morgan. The fee is free unless they win. For more information, go to forthepeople.com/big sales or #law529. That's forthepeople.com/big sales or #law529. And do me a favor, you tell them Big Sales sent you.